Democrats give their opening arguments as the impeachment trial continues in Washington. Also, why UN officials are calling for an investigation into the alleged hacking of Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos's cell phone. Plus, what the biggest swing county in Iowa can tell us about the 2020 election.
Rural America seems to have a strong affinity for outsiders, people who are non-politicians.
It's Wednesday, January 22nd. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. After a marathon Senate session over the trial rules that spilled into the early hours of Wednesday morning, the Senate resumed its impeachment trial today with opening arguments from Democrats. California Representative Adam Schiff is the lead House impeachment manager.
Over the coming days, you will hear remarkably consistent evidence of President Trump's corrupt scheme and cover-up. When you focus on the evidence uncovered during the investigation, you will appreciate there is no serious dispute about the facts underlying the president's conduct.
Democrats have 24 hours divided over 3 days to lay out their arguments that President Trump abused his power and obstructed Congress. After that, President Trump's defense team has the same amount of time. We'll have more on today's proceedings in our AM edition. And to follow along with our live analysis, please visit our website, WSJ.com. All outbound flights and trains to the Chinese city of Wuhan, which is at the center of the coronavirus outbreak, have been halted. Wuhan's public transportation system, including subways, buses, and ferries, will also be shut down. The indefinite lockdown of the city of 11 million people will begin on Thursday morning, according to China's state broadcaster. This is all an attempt to reduce the spread of the pneumonia-like virus, which has already been linked to 17 deaths. The number of confirmed cases has now surpassed 500 and have been reported in 6 countries outside of China. The suspension comes as China enters one of its busiest travel periods of the year, ahead of the Lunar New Year holiday, which formally begins on Friday. We're reporting exclusively on a whistleblower complaint that alleges Federal Aviation Administration managers lowered the bar on the approval process for Southwest Airlines flights from California to Hawaii. Hawaii is a popular vacation spot for Californians, and Southwest executives had described the destination as a gap in the airline's network. The Wall Street Journal reviewed documents and the preliminary conclusion from the Office of the Special Counsel, which is the government agency that handles whistleblower complaints. The complaint alleged that FAA managers brought in inspectors to expedite the process who lacked the necessary pilot licenses and had less specific knowledge about Southwest operations than local FAA employees. For more on this exclusive, head to our website, WSJ.com. Two United Nations officials are calling for further investigation into the alleged hacking of Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos' phone. That comes after they released the findings of a forensic audit that showed a connection to a WhatsApp account associated with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Bezos commissioned the company that performed the audit. Joining me now with more details is Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Jared Malson. Jared, what can you tell us about this alleged hacking?
Well, what we know so far is that there is this forensic report that was done, a forensic investigation of Jeff Bezos' phone that showed there was a high likelihood that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman used his personal WhatsApp account to send a video file to Bezos that started this huge surveillance operation that involved transmitting a large amount of data way beyond the normal amount of data that his phone normally would have been sending, and that went on for months in 2018, around the same time that Jamal Khashoggi, the columnist for the Washington Post, was killed. And that months after that, what we know, according to this UN report that came out today, is that the Crown Prince contacted Jeff Bezos again and confronted him with some personal information about his private life that he would have no other way of knowing because it wasn't public at the time. Or rather, at least it wasn't public. We're not 100% sure how he got the information. That is what we know now.
Jared, why would the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia be interested in hacking Jeff Bezos's phone?
Well, what the UN is saying today is that it suggests an attempt to influence or even silence the reporting of the Washington Post on Saudi Arabia. Jeff Bezos, of course, owns the Washington Post, and one of the Washington Post's contributors was Jamal Khashoggi, who was probably the number one critic of Saudi Arabia until he was murdered brutally inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. What the UN has disclosed today, which is the findings of this forensic report, shows that the hacking began in May of 2018, months before the murder took place, which shows that they were trying to gather information potentially about Khashoggi's employer prior to that time.
So what are we hearing from Saudi officials in response to all of this?
The Saudi government yesterday, through the embassy in Washington, said that these reports of the hacking were absurd. They haven't commented yet on this further report today from the UN, which adds more detail to what came out in the reporting yesterday. So we'll have to see what their actual response is. But there's a high likelihood that this is just going to put more pressure on the Saudi government after more than a year in which they've been trying to really turn a page on the Khashoggi killing, which caused an uproar around the world and in Washington.
Right. And what are the broader implications here specifically for the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia?
Specifically for him, it's yet another scandal, really, that has implicated him directly. The Khashoggi killing itself was a huge international outrage, really, from human rights groups, the UN, from members of Congress, that really created a crisis in Saudi relations with the United States and with the West in general. And this is going to call attention to all of those issues. And since the evidence here that the UN is calling attention to, these technical tests done on Jeff Bezos' phone, since they have personally implicated him, it's gonna just bring the attention back to him, and he'll have some more questions to answer about all of this.
Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Jared Malson joining us from Cairo. Thank you so much, Jared.
Thank you.
Before we go, let's head to Howard County, Iowa. It's one of the swing counties in the United States that voted for Barack Obama in 2012 and then for Donald Trump in 2016. But Howard went big both times, voting by more than 20 percentage points for each candidate. Our John McCormick traveled to Howard County to find out more about one of the biggest swing counties in the country and what it could tell us about 2020. So, John, give us a sense of Howard County, Iowa.
Yeah, well, it's a small rural county, population a little bit less than 10,000 people. It's, you know, a county that's very agriculturally, based. Probably about two-thirds or three-quarters of the economy is tied to agriculture. There's some small manufacturing. Sort of the tallest structures that you'll see in the county are, grain silos and church steeples.
So what is it about the county that made it swing so far from Obama to Trump?
Here's one potential reason why, from somebody I talked to, Jason Passmore. Mr. Passmore is the head of the local Chamber of Commerce and very in touch with the business community in Howard County.
Why did we swing to Barack and stay with Barack? He was non-mainstream. He was a one-term sitting senator, right? You could not say that he was part of the anointed ones, so to speak. And Trump, the exact same way.
Rural America seems to have a strong affinity for outsiders, people who are non-politicians. And so, you know, he really resonated with people there. And a lot of the people who backed him in 2016 seemed prepared to do the same in 2020. Some of the Obama-Trump voters that I interviewed, they're a little bit more on the fence, and they say they're, waiting to see who the Democratic nominee is. But even some of them are very much leaning towards supporting the president again.
So, John, in addition to the business community, you also heard from local party officials. Tell us what they had to say.
Yeah, well, I talked to both the Republican and Democratic chair people several times. And one interesting thing about the county is they really do seem to get along, those two people who lead the party. They have a friendly relationship. They tend to speak to each other fairly frequently. And they sort of know that they're neighbors and they need to get along. And so they do. And so Neil Schaefer is the chairman of the Republican Party. And he had some interesting things to say about why he thinks the county swung so dramatically.
I believe the county really looks at the individual candidate, not so much
a party or a wave. And I think people like that idea of someone coming in to shake things up.
And Laura Hubka, the Democratic chairperson in the county, she talked a little bit about how people need to get along and be neighborly. Because it is such a small place, politics is important to people, but it tends to be a little less divisive than maybe it is in other parts of America.
There's a couple people in town that have Trump flags hanging in their yard, and as soon as one goes up, someone's calling me, "Did you see that?" I'm like, it's not against the law to replace your Iowa flag with a Trump flag or to hang a Trump flag up or put a sign up.
But there are other ways where Howard County isn't exactly like the rest of the U.S., right?
It isn't a place that really represents America on average very much. It's an extremely white place, even by Iowa standards. It's 96.4 non-Hispanic white compared to a national average of 60.4%. And it's also a place where people tend to have less education, lower levels of educational attainment, according to the Census Bureau. And so this isn't an average place in America, but it is the sort of place where President Trump was able to run up big margins.
So, John, what can we learn from Howard County, Iowa, as we look to November?
Yeah, well, this is probably a very extreme example of the sort of county that's really going to be important in the general election. President Trump was able to win in some of those battleground states like Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania because he ran up the margins so dramatically in these rural counties. Obviously, all of those states were very close, and they're probably going to be close this time, but it could come down again to the rural vote and whether he's able to run up as large a margins as he did in 2016, or if Democrats are able to figure out a way to sort of hold down his margins at least a little bit in the rural areas, assuming they're able to, you know, do better in urban and in suburban areas. So these sort of places, could be a real sort of bellwether for how the 2020 election goes.
Wall Street Journal national political reporter John McCormick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. If you like what you hear, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.